Reaching retirement age can be exciting, but it can also be scary. Sure, it's great to have more freedom and a lot more time, but what are you going to do to fill that time? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today, Marion Matthews Clark, has taken on the challenge of retirement and written about her adventures in the new book, 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. I'll talk with her, and then we'll get some advice on navigating retirement from Michelle Buman of the Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. And we want to hear from you. What has been the greatest challenge of your retirement? Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of us dream about retirement. We think of the freedom and all that time. But the reality of retirement can be a real challenge. Today, we'll talk about those challenges, and we'll get some advice on navigating a happy retirement from Michelle Buman of the Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. But first, the story of one brave retiree. Marion Matthews Clark has taken on the challenge of retirement and written about her adventures in the new book, 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, when did you retire?
June 2011.
All right. So it's been about
2.5 years.
Exactly.
Right. I know.
And what made you decide that it was time?
I turned 66, and that was the time I could get my full Social Security, and that just seemed like a good time. I was working with students all the time, and I really enjoyed that, but it just seemed like that maybe I needed to move on, that right. They needed maybe a younger advisor at the Advising Center.
And you were with the Advising Center at the University of Iowa
right.
for many years.
For 24 years,
24
right.
years.
Yeah.
And that was a really intense job, too, it sounds like.
It was. Yeah, we had half-hour appointments, and then during registration, it was 20-minute appointments, so back-to-back. But I loved it. It kept me really focused. And one thing I've realized since retirement is I really need to be needed, and that filled that need. So
now, when you made the decision to retire, like I said, a lot of us dream of that time. We think, oh, at last, I can relax.
Right.
What were your expectations?
I was pretty nervous about it, actually. I'd gone to some retirement seminars at the university, and then my friend Jim retired, and so I kind of watched what he did. But he had family in Iowa. I'm from Oregon, so I don't have family in Iowa, and he did, and he is a very, very social extrovert person, so he seemed to just love it. And so it took me a while. It helped when people said it's going to take you about a year before, you know, to kind of get your legs in this, and so that was helpful.
Well, maybe you could read to us a little bit from one of the first essays in your book, and it's entitled June, and give us an idea of how it was when you were starting out your retirement.
Okay. She waylays me in the parking lot. I hear you just retired, she says. Isn't it wonderful? It's a woman from the university who retired a year ago. Well, it's only been a couple days, I tell her. Oh, you'll love it. My husband and I pick up and go anytime we want to. Yesterday, we took a 10-mile bike ride, and next week, we'll visit the grandkids in Minnesota, then in December, head to Florida for the winter. That's nice, I tell her, but I'm thinking, maybe if I had a husband to ride bikes and travel with, I'd be ecstatic, too. I remind myself someone else's life isn't the answer for mine. I'm not eager to live in Florida, with or without a husband. Any big plans, she says? A colonoscopy next week, I say. When she frowns, I laugh and tell her I'm flying to England in October to finally visit Marion, whose family my mother started corresponding with in 1948. That's wonderful, she says, then steps into her car and yells as I walk away, "Congratulations on your retirement." As she drives off, I'm irritated. Being elected president or winning a gold medal or getting anything published anywhere at any time deserves congratulations. But not dying before turning 66 isn't my idea of an accomplishment. More than that, she's assuming everyone feels wahoo about this phase. I have to admit, though, that I prefer congratulations to the advice of an elderly friend. She warned me, retirement isn't all it's cracked up to be. I had a terrible adjustment, just miserable, so you'd better be prepared.
That's Marion Matthews Clark reading from her book, 60-something and Flying Solo, or Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. And you mentioned that you don't have family in Iowa, and you don't have kids.
Right.
You are divorced.
Right.
And you were also an only child.
Right.
So you don't have a lot of family anyway.
Right.
When you retired and you'd been living in Iowa for a long time, you still had your parents in Oregon.
When I retired, they were both gone.
They were both gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
You write a lot about their last years in the
right.
book, so I was a little confused. But so when you retired, what made you want to stay here?
That was a really big decision because I have cousins in Oregon. I have a cousin, Linda, who I dedicated the book to along with my parents, who I'm very, very close to. But I realized that if I moved, she lives near Corvallis. She and her husband live kind of on an acreage with llamas and all kinds of animals. And so it's wonderful. But I couldn't move in with them. And moving to Corvallis, I don't know anybody. And I realized that just because she has friends, that same group of friends wouldn't automatically be mine. And I have a cousin in Portland and a lot of friends in Portland, but that's just way, way, way too big for me. I grew up in a town of 50, and that's too small now. But so there wasn't any specific place to move back to where I automatically would feel like I had a life like I do here.
And you do have a lot of friends, and you've created a social network from out of these friendships. And some of these relationships, I love how honest you are with your friends and how you lean on each other so much. It sounds like a lot of your friends have had to get to a point in life where they think, okay, who can I depend on? Who do I really value? Who can I turn to? Have you had a lot of those conversations with friends?
Absolutely. I feel so very fortunate with my friends. I call a lot. They call a lot. And we are process people, I guess I would call it. So we kind of process our life. That's how we live it. That's how we think about it. To try to figure out where we are and if it's not working, then what we can do to make it work better. And so we buoy each other up, but also kind of talk about where we can go from here. So, in fact, that's one of the big concerns I had about the book. While I was writing it, I could say anything I wanted to. But then when I actually found a publisher, then I was kind of – I looked through it all to be sure I wasn't going to alienate anybody by saying any particular things. So I checked a lot of things out with friends before put anything in there because I realized how important my friends were to me.
Absolutely.
They're my kind of my family plus my cousins. So that's – and I feel very, very lucky with that wonderful family.
When you did retire, you had that trip to England planned. And we're
right.
going to talk about that trip and the relationship that you have with this woman who is the daughter of the woman that your mother started corresponding with way back
right.
in 1948 in just a few minutes. But – you also write about how difficult each day was. What was it that made your days so difficult in those early days of retirement?
I think just not knowing what to do with myself exactly that was meaningful. What I've realized is I really do need a purpose. I want to have fun. And writing is a purpose, but it's a very solitary one. And if you aren't getting things published, then it doesn't feel like you're really accomplishing something. And I have to accomplish things. Thus my list that I talk about throughout the book. So I tried a lot of things out. You know, I took classes and I tried the make a skirt. I didn't try the class, but I went to the fabric shop that offered the class to think that maybe I would take that make a skirt class. And I think I thought maybe I'd become more domestic because I'm just not. I think people maybe who don't have kids but raise plants and cook and all of that, that gives them something else. And I think that I'm not good at a lot of those things. So
and not I'm, interested in
and
a lot
I'm
of those
not
things.
Interested. I'd love I would really like to like cooking, but I do it to survive. And so that, you know, I needed to find some other things.
Well, and you write about those lists that you make, and I'm a list maker myself. And it was interesting. I can imagine what your list of the day must have looked like before you retired. And then after you retired, it almost looked like you were searching for things to put on that list.
Right.
And,
I was.
And then you were having a hard time getting those things that you invented to put on the list crossed off.
Right. Yeah. Like my going through my files and, you know, I could get through part of them. But because I'm kind of indecisive, then sometimes those lists are harder to complete because I get through part of them and then I just can't go any further because there's a decision about a Grange certificate that I don't know whether to throw away from 1946 or what to do with it. And so it kind of stymies me. So
have you found a way to adjust your expectations for yourself so you're not setting yourself up by making a list that you can't cross things off of?
I still have very detailed lists. Every week I look at my big calendar or my schedule book and then I make a little piece of paper and I list things for the week, the main things. But I would say a turning point for me was starting to work at the food bank at the Crisis Center. That gave me something that I believed in, and it just felt like I had a purpose again. And then writing and all of that I did, I still did that, but the Crisis Center Food Bank's purpose that it gave me made me feel like I was important again or I had value again.
And structure.
And structure,
as well.
Yes.
How did you get involved in the food bank? How did you decide that's what you wanted to give your time to?
I went to an organization, I think, called Elderly Services, and so she just set me up with an appointment at the food bank, and I think there was a training session, so I went, and I was kind of nervous about it because, you know, I haven't started a new job for a long time, and so there was a learning curve, but the first day, I just came away saying, okay, this is something I believe in, and I can do this.
Even though there are challenges, physical challenges to doing a job that physical. You had torn your rotator cuff and
right.
had to deal with lifting groceries and things like that. So it strikes me that there are challenges that we just can't imagine along every step of this path.
Right. And what I learned from that is that if I work with people and we bag the groceries together, the client and me, that's what's better anyway. That's the connection. So
we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I want to talk about your trip to England and this personal connection that you made with a woman there that had been a part of your life for many, many years. And we'll also talk about some of the other adventures that you've had in retirement in just a moment. We also want to hear from you this hour. What's the greatest challenge you've faced in retirement? How have you overcome it? Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest is Marion Matthews Clark. She's the author of 60-something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking about retirement today. We'd love to hear from you. What is the greatest challenge that you've had in retirement? What are your plans for retirement? What are your worries? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Michelle Buman of the Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. With me right now is Marion Matthews Clark. She is the author of the new book, 60-something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. And Marion, could you read a little bit more from your book for us and give us another taste of retirement life?
This is from the Lemon Drop Incident, What Not to Tell Your Doctor. Most of the time, living alone is fine. Not being able to reach itchy places on my back or see without my glasses, if I've penciled my eyebrows into arches that resemble each other in any way, aren't big deals. The downside is when I fall into a worry loop, there's no one to talk me out of it. That's what happened the morning before my treadmill test. As I was bagging up tights, T-shirt, and tennis shoes, articles the hospital instructions said I should bring, the loop started. What if I passed out on the treadmill? They made me do an angiogram and I had a stroke during the procedure, as had happened to a friend of my mother's. What if they ordered an emergency heart surgery and I'd need care for 6 months? What if my friend Jim was right when he said he would never buy long-term care insurance, as he knew those shysters would find a loophole and wouldn't pay, which means I'd wasted $107.45 a month for 5 years, which is, well, an awful lot, which I should have saved to pay for the care itself. Unless, of course, I had a fatal crash as I drove to the treadmill test through the winter storm that was raging outside, and I hadn't redone my will. In a panic, I call my friend Patrick, who doesn't have health insurance and is still paying his $6,000 hospital bill for 2 brief visits for kidney stones last year. I explain the situation. Help me calm down, I told him. Well, if you're going to crash and die, be sure to do it on the way to the hospital, he said. Then you won't have to walk that awful treadmill. He paused. You'll be fine, he said.
Marian Matthews Clark reading from her book 60-something and Flying Solo, or Tyree Sorts It Out in Iowa. And there has been a lot of anxiety that has accompanied retirement for you. Were you surprised by that?
I think maybe I'm a little bit of a worrier anyway, an anxious person, but before retirement, I don't think I had time to think about it as much. So retiring just, I think, gives you, as my cousin said too when she retired, I'm afraid I'm just going to have too much time to think, and that's going to make me too anxious. And I think that's what it's done somewhat for me too.
I want to talk about the trip that you took to England, and that was a source of great anxiety for you. How far in advance did you plan that out?
Probably I started in February or March, and I went in October, so I started thinking about it then.
And you had a lot of time to think.
I have a lot of time to think. But I didn't retire until June, so I was busy that whole time. So it was really those summer months that I stressed out most about it.
And you had a traveling companion for the first part of the journey.
Right.
You went to Iceland, and then you went on to England with your friend Elizabeth.
Right.
And explored Jane Austen country, which
right.
sounds like maybe it was more exciting for Elizabeth than it was for you.
No, I loved it.
Okay.
I'm an English major, so
okay,
I love that.
And then the final part of this journey was going to visit a woman that you had never met but had been a part of your life for as long as you could remember.
Right.
You were going to visit Marianne. Tell me about her.
Let me just kind of back up and say that my mother got her grandmother's name from an agency that had a list of people that needed help after the war. And my parents had just bought the store in Mist, and so they could get things wholesale. And so my mother thought that that would give them a chance to, you know, buy some things and send them to this family. So they started that that communication in 1948. And my mother, through those years, had kept all the letters from Marion's grandmother and then her mother. So I had all those. And in the letters, Marion's mother would say, Marion is a sensitive child. She's so good with the twins that came along 3 years later. And her mother had died when Marion was 11. So I just decided when I read those letters I had in the lockbox that they really belonged with Marion. So I took them with me.
And had you maintained a correspondence with her after her mother's death?
My mother corresponded with her father for years. And then in 1977, I went to England on a literature tour and actually met her in a hotel room for an hour. And so my mother got in touch again with her father, because I think there had been a lapse in correspondence, and so that I was able to meet Marion for an hour.
Wow.
And she was married then to a man, and then since then she's divorced and I've been divorced. And she changed her spelling. Her spelling was the same as mine, which I think my mother had told me that she was named after me. But when I asked her, she wasn't sure. So she said she thought she was named after an aunt, and she added an N-E on the end of her name. So it's now different than mine. But it's still Marion. We're both Marians.
Okay. So this trip that you had worried about so much, and the travel, you know, travel can be very daunting. You were worried a lot about finding your way around. You're prone to getting lost, so that was a concern for you. But it also strikes me that you were doing something incredibly brave, because you were planning to spend quite a lot of time with this woman that you had seen for 1 hour previously.
Right.
Were you worried about that?
A little bit, although we'd corresponded and we'd emailed a little bit. She doesn't have email anymore, but we had. And she seemed like a person who thought about life, who questioned life, who was trying to find meaning and purpose. It seemed like we were alike in some ways. So I thought it would be okay, but the closer I got to St. Estelle, where she was going to meet me, I did have thoughts of, oh my gosh, what if we really don't have much in common?
What was it like to get together?
It was really wonderful. At the she met me at the train station, and I didn't see her for a while, which freaked me out because I thought maybe I've gotten to the wrong place. But then I saw her, and then she hugged me for a really long time, and we went back. She lives in a small place on the coast in Cornwall called Mevagissey, and so it was, you know, we took the taxi back to her place, and in the car, we talked about relationships and, you know, how they were hard. And she was retired and says she knew that I would get the hang of it in time. And so it was very wonderful. We write letters now because she doesn't have email. So we keep that going. And I'm going in April to visit her again.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things in your writing about that experience is that the two of you started talking about what your lives had been like, because when your mom was writing those letters, those initial letters, life was pretty tough in your house. Mm-hmm. And when her mom and grandmother were writing those letters, life was extraordinarily tough in her house. But none of that came through in the letters. What was that like to discover the truth after all those years?
It was really wonderful because I gave her the letters and said my mother had kept these from, you know, your mother and grandmother. And she read them. And afterwards, she said, I guess maybe my mother did care about me after all. And then a little bit later, she said, maybe after all these years, I can finally forgive her. So because her father had been in the war and come back hooked on amphetamines, and they sent Marion off into the pharmacy to get drugs, and her mother, you know, got hooked too, and then her father had kind of a mental breakdown. So then they had to move in with her grandparents, and the grandmother didn't really like that arrangement at all and didn't get along with the mother. So it was a very difficult household. But all, you know, the only mention her grandmother gave of any problems was she said, my son really isn't himself after he's come back from the war. So, you know, she shared that. And then I said that my parents had just bought the Miss store, and my mother's brother was accused of a dalliance with the clerk, and he and his pregnant wife lived upstairs in the store, and that was a mess. And my mother had said in a diary later that that was the darkest period of her marriage. But the letters never said any of that. They just talked about, in fact, in one of her grandmother's letters, she'd said, you seem like such a happy family. And, you know, our lives were nothing compared to hers. It was okay. You
right,
know,
but still a lot of secrets.
A lot of secrets and turmoil there. Right.
The fact that you were able to share these stories about people who were gone by that time, but it also seems to have given the two of you this remarkable intimacy.
It did. I feel very close to her. I feel like that she's kind of a kindred spirit, actually. She's wonderful.
So she told you that you would get the hang of retirement. By the time you finished writing this book, which of course was quite a while ago now, mm-hmm. it really feels like you found a routine. You found purpose again in life. Do you feel like you have the hang of retirement?
I feel like I am. I do have the hang of retirement much more. I feel like I know I want to live in Iowa, that it is my home. I've settled on that. I go to the food bank every week. I have my yoga class every week, and I write. And so I feel like my life is full, and I get together with friends. And so I feel very fortunate.
I'm so impressed by you now obviously you are a planner, like your mother, before you, but it seems like you have almost made a study of the vulnerabilities in your life and purposely shored up the places where you felt like there were some weaknesses. You talk about having your different teams now, your parts of different teams, and one of those teams is your birthday team. And these are people that you can celebrate your birthday with and celebrate their birthdays so that vulnerability isn't there.
I like that you're saying that. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but I guess I probably have done that. Maybe because I was an only child and then didn't have kids, it's been important to me to have connection with people and keep those going. And, you know, I write a Christmas letter to about 60 people each year. And most of those people I don't connect with the rest of the year, but I want to keep those connections going. That's really important to me.
That seems like something that a lot of us probably should pay even closer attention to. That's I want to broaden the conversation a little bit now, and we would love for you to join the conversation as well and tell us about your retirement challenges, ways that you've been able to overcome them, maybe challenges that still continue. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. With me is Marian Matthews-Clark. She's the author of 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. And I also want to welcome Michelle Buman to the conversation. She's a specialist at Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. Hello, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. And as I said earlier, retirement is something that a lot of us spend a lot of years dreaming about, thinking that it will be easy and wonderful and we'll have all this time and all this freedom. And I'm not trying to say that retirement is a bad thing, but it sounds like the reality of retirement is quite different from the fantasy of retirement. What are some of the challenges that you observe?
Well, I think it's pretty individual. Depending on the person and what they have done, it could be a challenge or it can be a relief. It really depends on how people were feeling about their job before they retired. If you didn't like your job, it's probably a relief. But with that said, it's, I think, a challenge for everyone to kind of figure out what to do next.
And when you give people advice, I realize most of the people that you work with have probably already entered into retirement, but if you had to give somebody advice about preparing for retirement, what would you tell them to do?
Well, exactly, to prepare, to have a plan, to maybe a year before you actually retire, to think about what you're going to do with all of your time. I think a lot of people think, oh, it's just going to be a big vacation. And it is kind of nice to be off work and not have that responsibility. But after about a month or two, it's kind of like, now what am I going to do with my time? So, and I think Marian was talking about that as well, kind of having a list of things to do. So knowing if you want to volunteer, if you want to participate in lifelong learning. I think it's also very challenging for people if your main social network was within your workplace, to find a way to either make new friends, make time for those friends who may be still working. Those are all challenges. So to kind of have a plan, how am I going to go about doing these things?
Let's go to the phones. Derek is on the line from Mason City. Hi, Derek.
Hello there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'll be 66 here in a couple of weeks, and I run into other old guys. I don't really like using the term old, but they say, I need to find something to do. I thought I would like retirement, but I really need to get back to doing something. And I think it's really important for everyone who is retiring to believe in their own potential. If you want to feel that you are weak and vulnerable and your life is basically over, and you're so dependent upon the family and friends and all that, you can find a lot of people who will agree with you and support you in those ways of thinking. But it's really not true. If you read the words of any of the greatly successful people in our country and throughout the world, Michael Jordan is one who comes to mind. Those people will tell you you can't be sucked into the negative, pessimistic, defeatist thinking of your friends and relatives who tell you, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Yes, you can. And the thing is, it's not a critical issue if you fail. The important thing is to try. So in picking some endeavor to go into now that you've finished your workplace activities, go ahead and pursue that with, and don't associate with a lot of people who are going to be telling you you can't do it. Pick something that you enjoy doing and get into it. Throw yourself into that. And by so doing, you will keep yourself, your mind active, and you will escape the clutches of depression. And
well, Derek, it sounds like you have a terrific attitude. Have you already retired?
I have a part-time job at a store here, just under 20 hours, and I, you know, that's, anything more than that is almost too much, but it's good to have a place to go to, even if you don't sometimes feel like going, because it keeps your brain stimulated, mm-hmm. you know, socially. And
well, Derek, thank you so much for calling and sharing your thoughts. We'll talk about it in just a moment. We need to take a short break, and then we'll come back. I know Marion has some thoughts to share, and I'm sure that Michelle does as well, and we'd love to hear from you, too. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Michelle Buman, Program Specialist at Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center, and also Marion Matthews-Clark. She's the author of the new book, 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the challenges of retirement. With me is Marion Matthews-Clark. She has written about the challenges of her own retirement in the new book, 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. Also with me is Michelle Buman. She is Program Specialist at Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. And right before the break, we were talking with Derek from Mason City, and he was talking about the importance of having a good attitude and feeling like you still have something to offer to the world. Marion, you wanted to comment on that.
Well, I agree with him 100%. I think it's finding what that is then. Because when I found the food bank at the crisis center, that changed things for me. And I do think you just have to, for me, I had to keep trying things and not give up on that. And so that's
right. And Michelle, what would you like to add to that?
Well, I agree with both of them that it's a time to kind of choose a new adventure, so to speak, opportunity to recreate yourself. I've seen that happen here at the Senior Center, where people have discovered different parts of their lives and things that they've never done before and really gotten into it, and it's because they try a lot of different things. And it's a great opportunity because you don't have the constraints of maybe the role that you had in your family or the role that you had in that in the job profession, and you know you can experiment and kind of rediscover yourself.
Now, of course, with all that you do at the Senior Center, it makes sense that your advice would be to get involved with the Senior Center in your community earlier rather than later, but do you find that a lot of people come to you because they feel like they're at the end of their rope? Because they probably, well, I'm too young to go to a senior center, but I don't know what else to do. This isn't working out for me.
I do think people are reluctant to come to a senior center because they are admitting they're a certain age. But I hear after they get involved here that they wish they would have gotten involved earlier. It's like, oh, I missed out on opportunities that you have. But we're not the only opportunity, obviously. We're talking about elder services. There's the RSVP. There's the Senior Corps. There's lots of ways for people to do something. And your caller also was talking about working part-time. And I think that's also a new view of retirement for a lot of people. It's that, you know, maybe they've retired after working 40 years in a certain organization or in a job, and they want to try something new, and it has to do with going back to work. So that's just, I think, the whole image of what retirement is with the baby boomers is going to look completely different than it did with the baby boomers' parents.
Right. I think that's what the baby boomers have been doing all along.
Exactly.
They redefine everything with each step along the road. Let's go back to the phones. Bonnie is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said. I have been retired for almost a year, and my experiences are very close to the author's. No family in Iowa, et cetera, et cetera. My biggest problem is not with volunteering. I do lots of volunteering. I am hoping to be a published writer. A lot of the things that she's already said. But the biggest problem I have is getting out of bed in the morning. There's a sense of not depression, but heaviness. Like, what is today going to bring? Or do I even want to get out of bed sometimes? And I always, that dissipates very quickly as I get into the day. But I was wondering what her advice might be besides read her book, because I suspect there'll be lots of suggestions there. But what would she suggest?
Marion?
Wow. Well, every Sunday night, I make my list of things that I'm going to do for the week. And I put in red the ones that are commitments, like the food bank and my yoga class. And then I jot down a lot of other things. And I guess to try to think on that list of something interesting that I want to be doing that day. But sometimes in the morning, I'm not depressed either usually, but I have kind of trouble getting out of bed. I don't sleep well sometimes, and so it's kind of a trial. And one thing lately that I've been thinking of, and it's made me laugh, and that kind of gets me up out of bed, is my mother used to say as she got older, the hardest thing I do every day is to get out of bed. And just thinking that, because she had heart trouble and all of that, but she was such a fighter, and she always, you know, got up and put on her earrings and those awful stockings that you have to pull on and stretch up. And so I've been thinking of that in the morning, and it makes me laugh, and somehow just laughing kind of helps me maybe connect or something and feel like, okay, we have this in common, and she did it, and I can do it. That's not really very helpful, but that's what comes to mind.
No, that's very helpful. I can understand the value of the humor, and also the idea that you kind of have to be prepared for getting out of the bed and starting your day, when before you had to get up and move fast. But those are very good suggestions, and I appreciate her being on the show, and I will buy your book soon.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Oh, Bonnie, thank you so much for your call. And, you know, one of the things you also write about, Marion, you have some walking partners. And, of course, in this kind of bitterly cold winter, perhaps that's not quite as practical, although there are other places to walk. Has that been something that has helped you as well, to make appointments, to make dates?
Absolutely. My friend Jim and I walk usually a couple times a week. And this winter, it's been so cold, we haven't. But we will drive over to the Java House and meet for coffee, or he'll come over to drive over to my place. We just did on Monday. And that really does help. It's just that companionship. And so I need to get up, and I need to get the coffee made, and that helps.
And Michelle, do you have any advice?
Well, I was just thinking that maybe if you, first thing in the morning, you have your list of things that you're going to be doing the next day, that would be an opportunity to say, I'm going to meet a friend for coffee, just like you were talking about, or to have, you know, something first thing in the morning, if that's the hard part of your day, to, you know, I'm going to volunteer at 8. And so you have that kind of get up and go. But I think it's hard for people to get up and go to work sometimes.
Yes.
So
I can relate to that, and I'm 39.
and so I don't think it's a unique thing because you're retired. And I think kind of remembering that as well, that, you know, some of these things that you're thinking about aren't unique now because you're in retirement. It's probably something that you just have a little bit more time to think about.
Right. And you don't have to overcome it. I mean, which is exactly what Bonnie was saying a moment ago. You, even if you didn't want to get out of bed when you're working, you have to get out of bed and make it happen anyway. Do you schedule a lot of activities for seniors in the mornings at the senior center, Michelle?
You know, it's hard to get people to come here at 7 o'clock in the morning because they're not.
I was thinking more like 10 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't thinking 7.
Nope. We have lots of things starting at 8:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So that probably helps when you're involved in something that's recurring that makes you want to get there. And I think 7:30 is unnecessary as well. let's go next to Dave on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, Charity. How are you today?
I'm good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just can't imagine why anybody would not love retirement. I'm a very outgoing, positive person, and I fell into retirement with feet first and going full blast. I've had so much fun for the last 13 years, I can't hardly believe it.
Well, good for you. What do you like to spend your time doing?
Well, it just depends on so many things. I can get up in the morning and have a full schedule ahead of me. Today, I'll probably spend a few hours writing this afternoon. I've been fortunate to have published a book, and I've written several articles that have been published in the last 10 years. That's a lot of fun on a cold day like this when you can't get outside. If it's good weather, I want an acreage. I always wanted to be a farmer, even when I was a teenager, but no money, no farm. So when I retired, I bought a small acreage. I love being on that acreage. But the ancillary things that come along with those activities are what really encourages me in retirement. I've taken up issues that are important to me as a tree farmer, and I've become involved with the woodland owners. So we lobby the legislature. We write articles. We have meetings. I've met some wonderful people. I'm also a cancer survivor. You interviewed me not too long ago.
Uh-huh.
And in that group of people, I have found wonderful resources. And what has been so interesting about it is most of the people in the cancer survivor group that I kind of rub elbows with on a regular basis, they're younger than I am. And they energize me. And I just find it so uplifting to be able to associate with people who are 20, 30, 40 years younger, who have had difficulties in their life, still address life with a positive attitude. And that encourages me. They also have a different view of life. And that has been really important to me as a minister. I still minister. So I just can't imagine anybody not enjoying retirement.
But, Dave, in some ways, it doesn't sound like you really retired, and I think that may be part of the moral of the story.
Well, it really is. Retirement really is just changing directions or changing things you do. Everything I do now, I really did before I retired, just not with the intensity because I had work, but I'd never had a job I didn't love. So I've just been very fortunate.
And you're, a very, very fortunate man.
And I hear the people you're interviewing talking about planning for retirement. And that, I think, is critical, especially in the financial area. I think people need to start planning for retirement in their 20s in order to have the resources to do the things that you will want to do when you have the time to do them. My wife and I have traveled extensively, Alaska, the maritime provinces of Canada, Central America, and Mexico. We've seen a part of the world I didn't dream as a child that I would ever have the opportunity to see. So, yeah, retirement is wonderful. I think it's attitude. And good health certainly plays a big role in that, even though I've had my health issues, because we live in a society in a time when medical practice can lengthen your life in spite of the health issues, we have an opportunity to enjoy more years and more time. But anyway, I'm going to keep writing.
Great.
Maybe you'll interview me again, Charity.
Yes, I can't wait for your next story. Dave, and remind us, since some people probably don't remember or didn't hear the program that we did together, remind us of the name of your book.
The book is We Call Her Keeley, and is the story of my journey to Africa with Above and Beyond Cancer Survivors to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. It's the story of my own journey with cancer.
All right, Dave. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Charity. Goodbye now.
Bye-bye. And now, Dave is a really fortunate man in many ways because he does have such a full life and was able to continue with some of the things that he was already doing in his life. He mentioned ministry, which was not his primary career, I don't believe, but continued to be something that he could participate in. And Michelle, do you find that for a lot of people, maybe not cutting all those ties to their working world, finding a way to maintain part of what they felt gave the door makes a lot of sense for people?
Absolutely. We're here in Iowa City, we're fortunate enough to have a really great senior center where people can volunteer to do a lot of the things. We have a lot of volunteer instructors who teach programs, and it might be that they've retired from, believe it or not, a math teacher's teaching math class here, something that I would never have dreamed we'd be offering people in retirement interested in learning algebra again. So it's a wide variety of opportunities, but people really either want to continue, it's either they want to continue doing exactly what they did or something similar to what they did while they're working, or they want to try something completely different. You know, it's I've been there, done that, now I want to do something different. So it's very individualistic.
Do you find that some people have made a plan for retirement and then just didn't like it?
Yes.
That must be difficult.
Yes, and also I was thinking about what your caller was saying about all of the opportunities he's had to travel and do things, and I think for a lot of people, they don't have that luxury. Maybe they haven't retired as well. Maybe they didn't work in a job, and especially for single women who might have been out of the workforce for a while, retirement is really scary and difficult. You know, if you don't have the financial means to do the things that you want to do. So when you're creating that plan in retirement, you have to keep in mind what you're able to do because of your financial situation.
Well, and I have also known people who have packed things up and moved to Florida or moved to Arizona and then realized they didn't have a social network there and didn't like it. And mm-hmm. and that must be daunting as well if you make a really big decision like that. Do you recommend that people maybe try some things out carefully before making such a radical life change?
Definitely. definitely. Especially when it comes to financial decisions and, you know, moving to a new location. I guess I would recommend that they go and visit several times and make sure that they see it all times of the year. I've heard of people moving to Colorado, for instance, and, oh, gosh, their winters aren't all that great maybe, or moving to Florida knowing that it's nice and warm this time of year, but come around summer, maybe not enjoying it as much.
Right. Well, I have one email to read before we go, and this is from Melanie. I think you'll like this, Marion. She said, there used to be a Dunkin' Donuts commercial where the baker would get up in the morning and he used to say, time to make the donuts. Somehow by saying this when I get up in the morning, it seems to get the day moving. I say it almost every day.
I like that.
So it's funny. Did you ever think that people would be turning to you for advice on retirement, Marion?
Good grief, no. No. I felt like I was making my way through it. One thing I wanted to add with the last caller, he said that he liked the young people in his life, and I have found that at the food bank, too. There are a lot of volunteers, and there's a pre-med student there who I think has already gotten into med school, and I told him I'd read his personal statement, and there was somebody heading to social work, and so because I just worked in the advising center, you know, I really liked talking to them and knowing
right.
what they were doing.
And you really have something to offer.
That was really special for me.
Marion, yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Marion Matthews-Clark is the author of 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. Michelle, thank you.
Thank you.
Michelle Buman is Program Specialist at Iowa City and Johnson County Senior Center. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Mm-hmm.